everybody. Welcome to Little Things Are Big Things Education Podcast with
K-Dub
and T-Free. We want to welcome you to a conversation about how valuable relationship building is with our students in our classrooms.
We will cover topics like connection activities, how relationships can be used to encourage student growth, and sharing our favorite memories from teaching. Everything we have accomplished in our classrooms goes back to the relationships we build with our students and is totally replicable. Feel free to use, share, and adapt everything we provide here.
Yeah, and if you would like to go even deeper with us, we would love to have you join our live monthly group where we go live with you every single month for an hour with a deep dive into some of the latest research and tools available for you to use in your classroom and to connect with your students.
Now, without further ado, let's get into this week's episode on non-traditional instruction.
All right, we're excited to get started with you. We just want to reintroduce ourselves again. I also want to apologize for my headphones last week. If you jumped in with episode one, thank you so much for joining our journey. I was trying headphones and apparently it made the audio way worse. So thank you for dealing with my voice and mouth off base. I'm Tim Freeberg. I teach high school math at Bowling Green High School out in Kentucky. I've been in education for 7 years. And then in addition to that, I facilitated workshops with social emotional learning all across the country with a group called Challenge Day for 3 years. And excited to share our knowledge and excited to be with my friend K-Dub. Take it away.
Hey guys, reintroducing myself, David Kilpatrick White, 10 years as a teacher, currently at formerly Wilson High School in Portland Public Schools, and also 20 years as a athletics coach, and I teach social studies currently to all ninth graders. And we're actually going to start today's episode with something that we're just going to talk about that happens, right? Like sometimes things happen out in the quote unquote real world that you kind of can't ignore, or that there's some need to address with your students because it's so major. And obviously yesterday, our country saw a group of domestic terrorists attempt to overthrow an election. And so that was something that needed to be addressed in our classrooms today. So we're just going to talk real quick about why it's important to address those things and kind of some do's and don'ts for addressing those things in your own classroom. So we're going to start with just talking about some of the things that are important as you're doing that. And the first thing is to really make sure that, yes, you want to be open with your students about how you're processing those same events, right? We're talking about relationship building, and part of that is being open and honest with your students. But that doesn't mean that it's your job to get up on a soapbox and tell kids what to think about current events. Your job in that situation is to really give the students some time to process together what they saw happening in the news. Got to keep in mind, they're teenagers, right? There's going to be a wide variance of experience. Some kids will have, like, I'll just talk about what I saw today in my classes. I had some kids that stayed on the news and were watching TV until Congress was done certifying the election. So they were up until 2 o'clock in the morning, our time, watching that process go through. Other kids, like, kind of heard about it, knew what was going on, but didn't really pay that close of attention to it, right? And with something less major than what we saw yesterday, you might have kids who have no idea that even anything happened. So you just want to create that space so that kids can be informed and so that kids can hear other kids talking about the topic and really kind of get out of their way. Tim, do you want to talk a little bit about how you kind of traditionally make that space available to students?
Yeah, I mean, 100%, right? The biggest thing that I've always seen in my classroom is anytime a current event comes up, or even if it's like a local event, right? Like maybe something at school happened and it's impacting all your kids, right? Is really honestly standing back and becoming a facilitator. Like that's how I think of it. And fortunately I've got, you know, that experience of like sitting back and letting people have conversations and knowing that it's a safe space to be open and honest. And really where I jump in the most is anytime like I feel like a safety of a student's opinion or like is getting attacked, like reminding people like, hey, like we all have different feelings, we all have different emotions, all of them are real, all of them are true, and to just be in that space for a moment and let it get off of our chests, let it kind of be there, and just kind of keep I don't know if it's necessarily keep the peace, right? But, you know, keep it civil. And so, yeah, I try not to jump in. Like, I'll add my opinion when the students directly ask me. And I'll be like, but, you know, that's just me. And everything you guys have is also equally valid. So I know specifically today you all had kind of guidelines and stuff from your principal. I know, obviously, the history teacher, you've got a lot going on there. And it directly ties in all these current events. Talk about kind of your experience today.
Yeah. So our principal did send out a message basically saying, no matter your content area, you need to address it in some way. If you don't feel comfortable leading a discussion, et cetera, here's something that you can, like a prefab statement that you can give to your students. I was, I guess, fortunate is the right word. I, for weeks, have been planning on today being the day that I was going to teach the rise of Hitler as an introduction to my Holocaust unit. So I felt like there were some pretty strong crossovers to like the Reichstag fire and what we saw yesterday and some things like that. I'll briefly share what I did today, and then I can also talk about some other strategies I've used for in-person learning and some strategies that my fellow teachers that I was texting back and forth with about what to do today. I did. So what I did, we use Zoom for our classrooms when they're online. And I just had the kids use the chat feature, and I just asked them to answer two questions at the same time in the chat. One was like, how closely were you following the events yesterday? And the second one was, what are you wondering, thinking about, or worried about right now? Right. As of, you know, today it was 10:30 in the morning Pacific time, after the events were over, and the kids just typed that into the chat. I told them I was using that to take attendance to make sure that everybody did it. I gave them the option to share that with me privately if they didn't want that to be a public share out. I do think it's important to give kids an opportunity for some anonymity in those thoughts during certain conversations. And I chose to do that mostly because I wanted to avoid it taking over the entire class period and avoid having, I know I have a few students who could potentially monopolize the conversation, and I didn't want that to happen. I also, it's easier to keep track of what kids are nervous about if there's something that I need to address. Like one of my students shared a private thing about being a person of color and how she felt as it related to white students on Instagram and our school community kind of speaking for her and things like that. And so I wanted to honor that opportunity. So that's what I did. I had a couple other teachers that like gave optional breakout rooms as an opportunity. Couple things like that. A couple other teachers just like literally spent the whole day on it. They used some lessons that came out from some of their sources, like Facing History and things like that, to talk about it. I know another teacher did like a journal entry opportunity where they just gave the students a couple minutes of independent time, and they have a whole system for submitting journal entries. I've done that in person before. That's a pretty good strategy. And then just speaking to the in-person, actually, let me back up. The other thing that I did, I also said, hey, at the end of class, when we're done, my class happens to butt up against lunch. I just said, hey, if anyone wants to stay on for 10 or 15 minutes and actually verbally process, I'll make time for that. I only had two kids that wanted to stay and talk about it today, which is fine, right? Like sometimes you'll get a lot, sometimes you won't get very many. But just making that time for kids who really wanted to hear what other people had to say. A strategy that I usually use when I'm in person is I will either do a Socratic seminar, depending on the topic in the class, or I do a thing where I have kids write down their thoughts on a post-it note, and then they go and put their post-it note up on the wall, and then we do like a gallery walk where kids walk around and look at what other kids put on the post-it note without names, right, so that kids can remain anonymous if they want to, is a good in-person strategy if you're fortunate enough to be safe enough to be doing in-person learning right now.
Right, right. Well, and I think one of the things you spoke to there, which feeds perfectly into how do we connect individually with students during these NTI times, like this was a perfect moment and you spoke exactly to it. Like, hey, I know you guys are going to lunch. I'm willing to stick around and have those one-on-one conversations. And I can guarantee those students who did stick around, one, already trusted you with that relationship you've spent the time to build. And two, further built that relationship with you because once again, you showed up for them in a way that they needed. And you could do that in an NTI format. And even though it's through the screen and it's virtual, being able to hear each other is huge. So, I love that you did that. I think it feeds directly into what we're talking about today. And I know you also do a really cool like intro warm-up kind of piece with all your students to get some engagement, do some attendance. Let's have you lead us into that with this week's connection activity.
Great. Yeah, I do have to adapt, right? We've all had to adapt to this online format. And so we thought about, since we're talking about non-traditional instruction today, what's a non-traditional warm-up activity? I called it a mic check. So on Zoom, usually on the first class of the week, I just come up with a question that is related to something that's going on, or just like a random question of something that I want to know about my students, like a kind of an ongoing getting to know you situation. So I just go through the agenda like I do every day. I have that agenda posted. We go through the agenda together. And then when it's time to do a mic check, I have the question posted and the kids. The way I do it now is I just go through alphabetically before I kind of figured out who my more confident kids were. And I let them start with the question. So like an example of what a mic check would look like is you would just say, hey, what is your favorite animal and why? And then I always start by giving my own answer, and I'll say something like, so like my favorite animal, I love wolves. I think they're cute. I love dogs as well. I'm a big believer in like community, and the idea of like a pack mentality is something that really speaks to me, but I'm also really into dragons. I think they're just awesome. So I might also say dragon. I had a hard time picking between wolf and dragon, especially since some people might think dragons aren't real and they don't count, but
totally counts.
And totally. Then we just let the students go through, and some kids, right, they're going to give you multiple answers and they're going to give you a deep dive on their thinking, and other kids will just kind of answer and move through, but you just acknowledge each one with a thank you and a maybe a follow-up question, and then we get through everybody. So it's a real quick and easy thing to be able to come up with. I've got a whole list of questions that I've asked if you want to know more about some ideas of things you might want to find out about, but we do that pretty much every Monday or every Tuesday for my students.
Nice. Mic check. 1, 2, 1, 2. I would totally be that kid who's clowning around on you all the time. I love that. I'm totally going to mic check. I want to answer that question. Let's see. Favorite animal has got to be the orca whale. And yes, I will always call it the orca whale, not the killer whale, because I don't know. Like, it was one of those, like, I grew up and initially knew it as a killer whale. And then I also learned it was called an orca. And I was like, they're just so like, I don't know, like there's something majestical and massive and amazing about them. And I had a really cool experience when a pod of orca whales came into Silverdale area, like Puget Sound area. And my mom and I, no joke, we jumped in a paddle boat, like legit, like with your feet paddles. And we went out to go see the orca whales in a paddle boat, a pod of orca whales. And so like all these like massive boats that were doing the whale watching were flying by us, and the whales would legit swim underneath us, and the boats would go by, and then they would swim underneath us and they would go by. It was wild. And so I've always loved the orca whale. So
I'm sensing a trend with you in seawater in dangerous situations.
You know, like, I'm such a water child, dude. Like, I've got to be on the water. I love the water. I trust the water saved my life. Let's be real. 2 feet of it. So, yeah. A couple follow-up questions I have for you. I know you mentioned that you do two answers. You give your wolf and then you gave your dragon. Why do you choose to do two answers?
Yeah, so that's something that I do very intentionally. I'm glad that you noticed that. The reason is, like, I usually give the first answer is probably usually, like, the more, I guess, honest answer. Like, what I would do if I was a student just answering the question in class. The second answer is to try and create a space for kids who might have an answer that they're not sure fits inside the box of what's acceptable. And so, for example, picking, like, very intentionally picking an animal from fantasy or from fiction opens it up for a kid who's into something else to be able to say an Ewok or to say,
good choice,
like unicorn, whatever, right? Because like there's kids, like every year that I ask that question, there's a kid that wants to say unicorn. And right. I think by me offering up that to start with creates a safe space for students to feel like, A, they can share that, and also kind of make sure that they don't get looked at sideways by kids who like to live inside the box. So,
right. No, I love that. And that actually feeds into what my other thought was, which was like, what do you do with students that just flat out either refuse or they give you the IDK? Oh my gosh, the IDK. like, no, like you do know like your favorite animal. So I love that you give them the option to go fantasy, right? Because it can hopefully eliminate some of that initial IDK or refusal. So, but what would you do if somebody just flat out refused?
So, I mean, I've been very lucky this year with online learning. I have not gotten a single refusal, which is kind of surprising. I used to get refusals all the time in person, so I can talk about that. you can kind of try and pull it out of them depending on like the kind of refusal that you're getting. Cause you can get two, right? You can get the disinterested, too cool for school kid who's just like saying like, I don't know, I can't think of anything. I don't know why I go into frat mode when I think of a kid who's too cool for school. But
whoa, bro.
Apologies to all the fraternity people out there.
But I'm a frat bro, so it's totally chill.
So what I do with those kids is I give them permission to not have to answer it. I think it's important for kids to not feel pressured into sharing about themselves. So for those kids, I really will just kind of like leave it lie and let it be, particularly if I know that it's like a kid who's got a reason to like feel like they're walled off and they don't want to share things. If it's a kid who I can tell maybe is uncomfortable or isn't sure that what they want to share out is okay, I'll say, hey, let me give you a pass. And we'll come back to you at the end of the circle. And what I've found happens for the overwhelming majority of my students is once they've heard everybody else share out, by the time you get to kid number 28 or 32 in your room, they've heard something that's similar to enough to what they were maybe unsure of being able to share out that they now feel comfortable sharing out, or they've heard something that they can just repeat, right? Like, is it totally okay? I didn't have one, but the person next to me said orcas, and I'm just going to say orcas too, right? Mm-hmm. And so giving the kid – but some kids feel uncomfortable doing that right after the kid next to them said orcas. But if you circle back around and come back to me in 2 minutes and I say orcas, then it's okay, right? Like it's not obvious that I just copied somebody else. Right. But again, to be really honest, I think a lot of the strategy is be really thoughtful about the questions that you ask, right? Ask questions that aren't going to like – eliminate a segment of your students that like don't ask who your favorite football team is, right? Because there's going to be kids who don't care, so
right.
That's totally fine. So, or you know, like what political party do you belong to? Like, don't ask that question. There's going to be kids that don't know or who don't feel comfortable answering, and that's a totally valid thought. So, I do really try and be thoughtful about the questions. So, like another one is like, hey, what's your favorite season? And I usually ask that as we're transitioning from summer to fall. In like right. September, October, right? And
right.
It's easy to go, I don't know, I guess fall. But like, you know, it's a lot of kids do actually get really excited for that question for some reason. So
And they probably have all the justification and story behind it to let you know why they love it.
Yeah. And again, like the whole purpose of these things is to get to know your students. And so what I really enjoy about these questions is like when I ask a kid what your favorite season is, and they answer winter, they often will say like, hey, I like winter because I'm really big into snowboarding and whatever, or I'm, you know, some kids like you'll get the, well, my favorite season is summer because, you know, no school. And that's like a, hey, really good trigger to let me know, hey, this kid really didn't like school. That's good to know.
Right.
Because that's like a thing that you can help scaffold for. So yeah, I think it's A, you want to find things that from a question standpoint, do you think everybody can answer and be really thoughtful about that. And then obviously, in your own answer, like you asked earlier, give two answers so that you can create some opportunity for multiple styles of answers to take place.
Right. Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that connection activity. Hopefully everybody can use that, modify it, tweak it, use it when appropriate, use it early, use it often kind of a thing. But so jumping right into our big idea for today, right? Trying to, how do we connect with our kids in NTI? I think it's kind of important to recognize all the different ways that NTI is truly showing up right now, right? Yeah. Like even just you and I having conversations, like our experience has been so different And I mean, we're in different states, right? You're in Oregon, I'm in Kentucky. And then we have conversations with, you know, our like my brother is still in Washington and their experience there. Like, it's so different across the board. Like, there is no universal experience. So I think we just want to take a quick moment and kind of share where we're coming from so you know our experiences.
Yeah.
And so I'll talk about how out in Kentucky, like we've done all like a little bit of all of it, right? Like March happened, the next, like we found out we didn't have school on Friday, was already scheduled. And so on Thursday after school, they came out with the decision that we were shutting down for the rest of the school year. Mm-hmm. We went into a 3-day weekend and the expectation was by Monday, you're coming back like into a virtual building and trying to figure out how you're going to teach your kids for the rest of the year, 100% virtual. So that was chaos. I'm sure a lot of us experienced something similar to that. And then with the next few months of prep time, so to speak, we have set ourselves up so that we're actually on a hybrid model right now. And so I'd say 80% of our student body has chosen to come back in person in a hybrid model. And so they're in two groups. We get Monday and Wednesday with half the students and Tuesday, Thursday with the other half. And then we alternate the other Fridays between three different options. There's we call them purple gold because of our colors. So purple comes 1 week, gold comes a week. And then there's a teacher like planning, catch up, recovery, intervention. Like it's the flex. And then that's with 80% of our kids. And then the other 20% actually chose to go 100% virtual. And so our district literally created a virtual academy from scratch over the summer. And we're doing like an online platform and we're showing up and we're, you know, giving some instruction, but a lot of the platform is, you know, instruction is built into the platform that we're using. And so I'm kind of like a glorified tutor almost for those students.
Oh, wait, let me pause you for a second, Tim. Are you being expected to teach both the kids who are in the modified structure and being a teacher in the virtual academy?
Yes. Here's my schedule. First period, I meet online with my virtual academy, regular geometry. Second period, I have in person, and I either have purple or gold in person. Third's my planning period. Fourth is my virtual honors geometry kiddos. Fifth is my regular in person, and then sixth is my second is also an English as a second language or English language learning geometry. So mm-hmm. Second and sixth, I have these students in person and they're my ESL groups. So like I've got basically four preps, five periods, three of them in person, two of them virtual. Like it's like when people talk about, man, like I think teachers' workloads have increased this year. I get it.
Yeah, I feel very lucky after hearing your story. And I do want to quickly shout out, I think Tim and I mean, Tim's situation sounds way harder than mine, but I have friends who teach in elementary and I have friends who have kids in elementary. Man, all elementary teachers deserve, in addition to a pay raise, many other accolades and thank yous and notes of appreciation, because that scenario is really rough. Right. So I'll go
and quick shout out to the parents, right? Like one of our other best friends, Brian, his wife literally has gone from like working mom to stay at home working mom / teacher. They've built a classroom in their home. Like,
yeah.
So shout out to the parents as well that are doing all sorts of crazy stuff right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, elementary teachers, I can't even imagine. So, wow.
Good catch on the parents, though. You're right. They're definitely dealing. I'm also very lucky not to have to deal with that in my house right now. I just have a dog.
Or the teachers who are parents of elementary school kids.
Yes.
That is also a major thing in our building for the high school kids. Like, it's like they've got their own elementary school kiddos, and like they're at work with them trying to help them do their elementary online while they're trying to teach their high school classes. I'm like,
And you thought having four retrievers was chaos.
I'll take my four dogs.
So my situation is a little less complex than Tim, similar to Tim and probably a lot of you guys out there listening. Significant just like hard slam, like you said, like, hey, we're done. Ours was a little bit different. We took the week off before spring break, I think is my memory of things. And the original plan was week before spring break and then spring break. And then hopefully we'll come back in person. And then like in the middle of that week, they're like, actually, we're not coming back.
Right.
So I was really fortunate. I already was putting everything I did in live classroom on Google Classroom as like a way for kids who would miss class and things and all sorts of other scaffolding reasons. So it was less of an issue for me, but definitely a really confusing, chaotic situation. When we came back this year, the major modification that our district made is we have traditionally been a block schedule high school where kids had 8 classes on their schedule and teachers taught 6 of those 8. And then they went to 4 every day. So what we chose to do to eliminate the confusion, a lot of feedback we got from our students in the spring was that trying to keep track of 8 classes online was a disaster. Probably more so of a disaster since you also had 8 teachers all separately trying to figure out how to do that on the fly. So they decided to make things simpler. They were going to condense 1 year's worth of course into a semester, but meet every day. So it was 4 periods instead of 8, but every day. So the way that works at our school or in our district is that you have 4 classes every day, the 2 in the morning from roughly 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock are synchronous, meaning that you're expected to be on Zoom live participating in class. And then after lunch from 12:35 to 3:30, you have your other 2 classes asynchronous, meaning there's kind of a time set where you can check in with your teacher if you need help. They can have Zoom open where they're available immediately on email. And then you can get things done during that time that's set aside. Or, you know, if you've got daycare issues or whatever, you can finish it kind of, you know, asynchronously. And right. So we do that. And then the schedule inverts. So the way our schedule works is each student has 2 classes live on Monday and Tuesday and Thursday and Friday. And then Wednesday, they have time set aside for all of their classes asynchronously and then office hours the second half of the day. So that's just our schedule. It's different. Even some of the other high schools in the district have decided to do a different model, but that's what we're dealing with. So it's a little bit more structured and a little bit less hectic than yours with dealing with both in-person and out-of-person learning at the same time. So.
Well, and you're basically, if I understood it correctly, right, like you're going to get a chance basically to reteach the entire year, the second half of the year now, right?
Yes, and.
All right, because like everybody's switching out. Like you just finished like a group that did a full year in a semester, right? Or you're about to in the next week.
Yeah, so I'm really fortunate. I already only teach 1 prep. Like we have these things called 9th grade communities where it's, like we work with other teachers who are teaching the same batch of students, which kind of got disrupted with, or definitely got disrupted with the remote learning process. But all of my classes that I teach are 9th grade modern world history. So like, okay. I'm very lucky. If I wanted to, I could just take what I've been doing for the last 4 months and spit it back out onto Canvas as the platform that we're using and just redo it. I'm probably going to make some changes based on some of the feedback I've gotten from students, but I could do that. A lot of my colleagues, however, what they chose to do, which was probably the right thing, is the school said, hey, you're going to teach these 2 preps first semester, and then second semester, you're going to do your other prep. They really tried to like limit the number of preps that you had at the semester. So they won't be able to repeat as much, but at least they're not in the same position that you are, where like every class that you're teaching is a different prep. So.
Right. And then we're teaching it 2 days in a row, because let's be real, most of us have experienced this when the students are at home, they're not doing work. And I don't know if you're having a similar experience, but my specific kiddos that are in class, when they're at home, like they're like, nope, I'm either like taking care of the family, I've got a job, I just don't care. And, you know, unless I'm at school, I'm not doing school. So it's literally, yeah, I've been trying to repeat teaching all sorts of stuff. But, you know, instead of us getting into like a complaint session here, you know, we'd love to give some resources on how we are being successful and how we're still able to connect with our kiddos. And so one of the things for me that has been massively successful is just doing the things we do when the kids are in person. Ask them how they're doing. Check in with them. I normally would be playing music like at my door and greeting kids as they come in. So mm-hmm. I get Google Meet 2-3 minutes early. And guess what I do? I turn music on and I greet them when they walk, you know, come mm-hmm. into my virtual classroom. And you know, I know they like it because I've put out feedback, like requests for feedback. And they say like 80% of them, they're like, yeah, we like it. And the other 20% are like, you know, it makes me smile, but I just don't really like loud music, you know, but yeah, they still know that I'm acknowledging them. And sometimes it's the only time that day that they're being acknowledged. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just connecting there. For me, I want to know about the student. And so I've been doing goal setting activities with them, which have given me some phenomenal information about who they are, what's important to them, how I can relate content to them. We, right before winter break, actually just did a deep dive into some personal growth stuff. Just because the way the units were landing, I was like, you know what? I think there'd be some better use if we really set up some of these empowering social, you know, self-improvement kind of vibes. And we did like vision boards, and like it's been great to see them, you know, get creative, do things that they're passionate about, put, you know, some of them are going to do the bare minimum, but like I've got a dozen or two dozen of my students out of probably 40 or 50 of them that like went all out, and I'm like, this is so, you know, and like I've really enjoyed it. My students have really enjoyed it, and I know that it's built that connection piece. So what are some of the things that have been successful for you?
Well, so one of the many things that we have in common, right, is I also play music at the beginning of class, whereas class is getting ready to start and greet every kid at the door. I basically do the same thing you do. I haven't asked for specific feedback about it. I should probably do that after hearing you talk about that. The feedback that I've gotten unsolicited is that a couple of times when there hasn't been music, for whatever reason, like I forget to put it on or whatever, kids will say something like, hey, what's up with the awkward silence that we got going on here or whatever. And then almost every week I get a request from a kid via email, like, hey, can I request, you know, the new Billie Eilish song, or can I request whatever? And so I, you know, then obviously I just do student requests. That's something that I actually do at the beginning of the year with my students in the first place. I actually have a student playlist saved on my account where I can just like play songs for that class's requests. Right. So I'm doing that as well. I'm not a DJ like you are in my spare time, but I do have a playlist set up. I've found that the two things that are working best for me, number one is routine. Like, so my students were 100% online. There was no choice in that. So that creates a different circumstance than you have. But the routine that we have is like we do Socratic seminar for like my second period class, for example, every Thursday. And they know that that's what we're starting class with. And I made that choice for a couple of reasons, right? Reading comprehension is a really tricky thing. And it's extra tricky when there's not the ability to walk around the room and check in with a kid and provide the extra scaffolding, or it's really hard to provide alternative readings in an online setting because you're not sure what choice a student's going to make and things like that. So Socratic seminar was the tool that I use to make sure that every kid is getting comprehension of what we're reading. And then giving them multiple entry points so that they can get credit for the seminar in case they didn't understand the reading. Like, I still want them to get credit for the assignment, right, which we can talk more about at another, like we're going to talk more about at another time. But having that routine, like my kids know where everything is on Canvas all the time. It's really minimalistic and straightforward, which they've asked for. Like, I tried something new like week 3 or week 4, and they were like, hey, don't do anything new. Just do it.
Right.
So I got that. Yeah, so I got that message loud and clear from them, and then that routine. And then the other thing that I've done, and I think one thing that's really important to acknowledge, the interactions that you have with kids, especially in my case, where I've literally never met any of these kids in person because they're ninth graders.
Right.
So they're new to the building, quote unquote. We're not in the building, but they're new to the building, and we've never been in person, right? So like, I don't know these kids. So I got a couple of tips from someplace. I apologize to whoever came up with this stuff. I don't remember writing it down, but simple things like always starting an email with a kid's name,
right,
is just like a thing. And then always following up with a kid when they mention something. So like for my asynchronous, I have like a little attendance form that they fill out. It's a Google form that I just refresh and resend. And there's only like two questions on there because I have to take attendance, right? So it's like,
right,
I need your name. I need to know if you want to meet one-on-one for a Zoom conference. And then I want to know, where is your social emotional health today on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being like, holy crap, I'm in trouble, and 5 being like, things are great, don't bother. And then I just have a commitment that as those forms get filled out, right, they get filled out randomly throughout the day. Some kids fill it out the second I post it. Some kids fill it out at midnight or 2 a.m, right? They're kids.
Right.
I always respond to anyone that puts a 1 or a 2 in that score and just like, hey, is there anything you need? Do you want to tell me what's going on? Is there something I can do to help you? And like an example today, a kid's like, oh God, I thought I hit 5. I must've been on the wrong side of the scale, but thank you for checking in. That's really nice of you, right? Like a kid who's never hit 1 or 2 before, so doesn't know that I always follow up, but the appreciation. And then that parent actually emailed me and said, hey, you know, student X said that you emailed him because he accidentally marked that he was having a rough time. He just mentioned it at lunch. I thought it was really cool that you did that. So I know that I think those two things in terms of what we talked about last time, letting kids know that you care, that follow-up is really important. And then just one last thing on that. I've also, to kind of try and just have some own positivity in my own life, if a kid marks a 5, I always pick one kid, particularly if I know they haven't marked a 5 before, to like acknowledge, just like I'll send them an email and like, hey man, you marked a 5. I'm so excited that you're having a 5 day. That's awesome.
Right. You know?
And then sometimes I'll be like, hey,
that follow-up though, that's so huge. Like I know so many teachers that will ask that question because we want to care and then we get busy and we forget to follow up. So thank you for doing that. And like, oh, that's awesome.
So yeah, I would say those are the two main things. And I think we're going to talk about this more, right? But the idea of balancing more than ever in this circumstance, right? Like we're talking about this all the time. It's going to be a dominant theme throughout all of our conversations. But how do you balance as a teacher the social and emotional needs of your student? Because they can't learn if those things aren't being met.
Right.
With the also, like you said, like the kids have to get the work done, right? Like learning has to take place because kind of whether we like it or not, guess what? Next year, these 9th graders, they're going to be 10th graders. And those 10th grade teachers are going to have an expectation that, like in the case of my school, if you're in social studies class, if you can't back up a thesis with a piece of evidence, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So we got to make sure that we're practicing that skill and that the kids are getting what they need for that.
Right. Yeah. And I think what you started with is so right. If we don't have the social emotional foundation, like we're not in a good space, like we're pissed off at the world walking into a Google Meet, it's going to be real hard for me to want to pay attention to you, especially when I'm not in your physical presence, soaking up your physical energy of I care about you and I want you to learn. Like there is still that disconnect, which makes this even more difficult. Like we have to over exude. Like that's why I'll go out of the way when I'm playing music early and like, you know, I'll be like, yo, what's up, Johnny? Or, you know, like, hey, good to see you, April. You know, like I'm gonna bring that energy because I know it will soak through the screen a little bit better. And I mean, I'm also one of those dudes that kind of believes in energy in general. So like, I'm gonna push that to you through the 3 mile radius I've got.
Well, and you brought this up last episode. And I think it is true. Like you are this larger than life character. You know, I've been your best friend for a really long time and know that that's an honest, it's not an act, right? That's who you are as a person.
Right.
And there's going to be people listening to this who are like, well, that's not really me. And I'll be honest with you. Like I can be that person, but I'm usually not. I'm a little bit more reserved. I'm definitely passionate, right? Like, especially if you see me on the football field jumping around like a nut show, but like, you can do these same things that Tim's talking about to bring energy out without being, right, be yourself. And so like an example of that just from this week, I've got a student who occasionally shares out, you know, is clearly very intelligent and has good thoughts on things, but is very rarely is like the dominant voice in class. In our attendance methodology, we use Synergy. It gives me an alert like a week in advance for a kid's birthday. And then obviously on the day of their birthday, like it's got the little cake with the candles on it. It lets me know that it's Lisa's birthday today, right? So not the student's name, I made that up. But so I had this student, right? And I always acknowledge that. And so like kid logs in, I'm just like, hey, Lisa, happy birthday. You know, awesome. What are you doing anything? Or are you stuck at home because of the pandemic? And she thanked me about 3 different times in the first 5 minutes. And then her behavior for the rest of the class was dramatically different. She led 2 different conversations. She was the first to share out in other opportunities where there were kind of just like, hey, popcorn share out opportunities, she spoke probably 15 times as much on Monday when I said happy birthday than she has before. And then I'm really interested to see how that carries over to tomorrow when I'm going to see her live again for the first time since then.
Right. No, I love that. And birthdays are so like big and small, and like asking the student their preference. Like I sent out a form first day of school that was like, hey, you know, when's your birthday? How do you like to be celebrated? And I've been sending out, like, on Fridays, I schedule an email to go out. Mm-hmm. So I don't even have to like think about it on a daily basis. I chunk it. Right. And so these students picked, you know, I want happy birthday sung to me, or I want a homework quiz bonus point, or I just want you to say happy birthday. Or they're like, no, don't celebrate me, period. Right. And so I scheduled this, and it's in an email format. And no joke, the kids that want happy birthday, they get an email that says, hey, happy birthday, here's your happy birthday song. And they click on a link. It's me and another student aide that are legit singing them happy birthday. And they're like, I can't believe you did that. And then, you know, I also have like this, you know, very basic stock image of a birthday cake that just says happy birthday, here's your homework point quiz. And that, you know, it lands with them. And then the kids are like, you know, I don't really want to be celebrated, don't make a big deal about it. I'm like, hey, you know, happy birthday, just wanted to say what's up, I hope you have a great day, you know. And like, I meet them where they want me to meet them, and birthdays are a great way to do that, especially if we know how they want to be celebrated.
And I need to steal that from you. That's a really good idea. I think you even mentioned that last week, maybe. But yeah, I think having that survey, because you're right, there are some kids. I'm thinking especially about some of my kids who come from different families than my, like my own experience, where birthday is not a happy day, right? Like for whatever reason, it's a reminder of something unpleasant. And to be aware of that so that you don't accidentally like bring up this thing that's now going to make a kid go into their hole in some way, shape. Like, so
speaking of social emotional awareness,
so I think, survey, that's speaking of, I get to try again second semester. I'm going to include that in my like beginning of the year things I need to know is how do you want me to celebrate?
I'll send you the Google form. So you've got it. Maybe we'll even, we'll post it on our website at peakstatemathematics.com, where you might be watching this podcast. We'll post it and I'll tag it in the YouTube channel as well. Well, let's just share that one out for everybody. It's a good one.
Great.
Awesome. I think one other piece that we wanted to touch on today too was, you know, knowing our student, and I think the social emotional learning part is so important, right? Because we do need to make sure they're taken care of, and we need to make sure they're accomplishing what is expected. So that like stick and carrot idea, you know, like for a lack of better example right now, right? Like we want to motivate and say, hey, go get this. And then there's other kids that were like, if I've taken the time to build that relationship, I can sit down with them and be like, yo, what's going on? Okay, I get it. I'm here for you. I feel for you. And you know what? Like we got to buck up. It's time to go. Yeah. I'm going to help you, but I need you to put in the work. And being able to have those conversations on a one-on-one basis. Like I know for me, like I've definitely had that situation where my geometry honors kid, like I've got an eighth grader in a sophomore class right now, where I put an assignment out there with four extra challenge problems, and he loves it. He eats it up, and like he wants his brain to get pushed. And then I've got another student that was in that same class that was like, I don't know why I'm in the honors class. I'm like, yo, I'm going to give you the regular geometry like platform, and I'm going to work with the counselors to make sure that's where you're supposed to be. But I want you in this class because it what fits your schedule. Now you got to put in the work. And then a week later I follow up. I'm like, yo, you didn't do any work this week. What's going on? You know, it's been hard for me at home. Like I can't focus. I'm like, all right, here's the situation. You're going to set a 20-minute timer on Google because you're on your computer. And for those 20 minutes, your phone is on your bed. Like you're not near it. It's away from you. You're going to grind for 20 minutes. When that timer goes off, stand up, shake your body out, go look at your phone, hit your distractions, put your phone back down, reset your timer. Let's go. And like all of a sudden he started getting some work done, and you know, like, but I took the time to build the relationship so I could go at that kid like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was very well aware of where he was at mentally. So I knew I could push him.
Yeah, I think that's a really good example of like when we're talking about balancing the social emotional needs versus like the learning that needs to get done. I always come back to this phrase from I don't think it's challenge day, but it's just like the idea of yes and, right? Like,
yes. Like improv in general, right?
That's improv. This thing is happening. Acknowledge it. Okay. And how do we still get to where we need to go? Maybe that looks different for kid to kid. And one of the things I like that you talked about there with like the carrot and the stick is as we develop relationships with our students, we can start to understand how to motivate that kid in a different way, right? Because the reason that you and I are so adamant about the relationship building being essential to being a good teacher or being the best teacher that you can be is that we know that one size doesn't work for everybody, right? Like you have to, like the edge of speak is, right? We have to differentiate and modify for our students, right? So like I can think of kids that are like great. If I send them an email every time they finish an assignment and like, hey, nice job, great job getting that done. And give them those ups every time they do the work, then guess what happens? The work keeps coming in. And then with that same student, again, not naming names, but with that same student, when I don't send her that email, it takes a while to get her back on track, right? It takes a moment for things to get solved. On the flip side, right, I have another student, kind of similar to the one you were talking about, kind of a high flyer. Another student who just like wants to literally will not accept anything other than 100% in class. And that's like a whole nother conversation I've had to have with this student about the idea of perfection being the enemy of many things, but like including social emotional health. Like this is like not a great mentality to have.
Right.
But what's important about that student, right, is understanding, right, I know how important good grades are to that student. So it's really easy for me to be like, hey, I understand that. And actually being honest, this happened to the student, like her pet got attacked and like was like on life support over Christmas Eve. Right. So we talked about that via email and then it was like, hey, this is what we're doing this week in class. I know that you care about your grades. So I'll give you some extra time, but like you said, you want a 4.0. We got to get this done. And lo and behold, got it done. Right. Knew that it needed to get taken care of.
Right. And I think that's important. I overlooked it. I didn't speak to it directly, but that flexibility for the individual experience. You know, when a student needs some extra time and when a kid needs an extra push. But at the end of the day, if you're not going to give a kid points for turning something in late, they're not going to turn it in and you've lost that chunk of learning. Right. So, however that shows up for you, however that shows up for your district policies, like find a way to make sure that students learning is not impacted because of their life experiences. So
absolutely, 100%. And I'm glad that you brought up policies, right? Because we do have things that are outside of our hands, and that's a really good place to be open with your students about like, hey, these are things that I don't have control of,
right?
And these are things that I do have control of. So let's operate in the sphere of things I have control of, right? Because that's the same thing that you need to do as a person, right? As a student, you need to operate like control what you can control, and don't worry about things you can't.
And it's such a good life lesson about like false deadlines and real deadlines too, right? Like maybe the district policy is you can't take late work after the quarter ends because the grading window legit is closed in Infinite Campus or whatever, right? Versus as a teacher, I don't want you to turn stuff in late, right? That's like a false deadline, possibly. And then there's the real deadline, and just trying to maximize student growth and opportunity and learning and all that. So, I'd love to jump into a quick story time with you here. I think this is a great moment to share maybe another one of those like almost like heartfelt, like why we do what we do and how this year has been so difficult in so many different ways. But where has our efforts to still connect, how has that shown up in a really positive way that makes us love what we do still as teachers?
Yeah, let's do it, man.
I'll go first. I got one I'm thinking of right now. I reaped the reward too. I didn't even know it was coming. But I got this email. So Friday before winter break, I sent out an email to my email list, which I gather all the parent emails early from the students. And then I open it as an invite for parents to add to it so I can keep them in communication. I don't do a very good job of it, but like big things like, hey, it's winter break. Here's things you should be working on. Here's where your student's at. Here's all the resources. I wanted to set them up for success for that break. I got a response from one of my parents that was like, oh my gosh, you know, like, thank you so much for caring about the kids, busting your tail to like provide, you know, the content and making sure they understand math, but then allowing them to do these personal growth things. Cause we had just finished like the vision boards and things like that. And I encouraged them to do it with their child. Cause I think it's good tools for adults as well. Right. And that allows an opportunity to connect with your student, as a parent. And so they were just very appreciative. Then I was like, you know, like I had that like good heartfelt feel good moment. Right. And then actually when I got back to school, she, in addition to that email, had sent me like a Christmas card kind of a thing saying thank you and like a $10 gift card to Starbucks or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, ah! I was like, somebody does care about everything I'm doing. And like, you know, like just to know that I had a positive impact on not only the student but the parent, like, makes me feel good. And then, you know, like, I wasn't seeking a $10 Starbucks reward, but, you know, I'm not going to say no to it either, so... Oh.
Not with that schedule of yours, man. You got to get all the Starbucks you can.
Right.
Yeah, that reminds me actually of a kind of a similar story. I, again, being 100% remote, I had a student that was falling behind. And because of home situations, grandma has been the primary adult who has been helping with the education part. Like, you know, mom is still in the home and all those things. But just because of, you know, mom works and isn't available to help with things, grandma's been the one following up. So grandma, you know, sent me an email, asked if we could do a one-on-one Zoom with her and her student and myself. Yeah. So we set that up. We talked through like what was missing, how do we get it done? What are some issues? Like, what are some hurdles to where things are at? And then set up a follow-up meeting for like, I think it was 2 weeks after, like, hey, let's check in and see how things are going. And so did the follow-up, and grandma was just so thankful that taking the time to talk to them, taking the time to make sure that everybody understood like, hey, things are weird, and being flexible to like what the things are. And then also just connecting with that student. So like I got a really nice email from that student who just said, I really appreciated how you talked about things in a way that didn't make me feel like I was wrong. Right. Cause I needed an ally in that conversation with the adult. Right. And not that meant that student was like absolved of doing the work, right. She turned in all the stuff that she needed to get turned in. But still having that moment. And then to your point, just about acknowledgement, I do, you know, I will admit openly, right, my quote unquote love language is words of affirmation. So it is really nice when all of your work gets affirmed by somebody, for sure. And I had a really weird week, like my first week back this week, like Monday, I had like four different things happen where it was really clear that my efforts to connect and build relationships were making a difference. In some ways it was something scary, right? Like I had a student that told me some things about home life that were kind of scary. Like we talked about being mandatory reporters last week. Like I had to mandatory report something, which I haven't had to do all year, but like I developed that relationship. Hopefully that works out for that student. I had another student who was just like super thankful and like wouldn't stop talking in class about how much they appreciated the way I do things, because we were revisiting norms and things, and just like went on and on about how my class was the only class that they felt like they could be themselves in, and all this different, like, and publicly, right? They did that in front of the whole class, which made me feel good about how comfortable they felt being themselves. Right. And whatnot. And then another, I got nominated for staff of the week by a student, right? So it's just like you have all these things where it's like, hey, that's not the reason that we do those things, but it is also nice to get that side hip check benefit of like the students acknowledging that what you've done has been helpful for them, right? That the little extra motivation you need to keep working.
Right. And I want to challenge what you said there too, just a little bit. Like, I know it's not what we do to try to get the acknowledgement, but I do think it's what a lot of us do is to make sure we're making an impact, we're making a difference. Mm-hmm. And I know with 100% certainty that you're doing that for sure. There's your words of affirmation, buddy. but no, like for real though, I know that what we do on a regular basis is a little bit harder in a virtual world, but it's still making massive impacts. And you know, I just want to leave us in this moment with the knowledge that, like, put in the time and effort, connect with your kids in NTI, do some of the things that you normally do in person, but do it through a Google Meet or a Zoom or whatever it is you're using. Make a phone call home for positive things. Mm-hmm. Like, celebrate birthdays, celebrate good scores, celebrate effort, you know, and do all those things and just do it virtually. So, I just want to say thank you to everybody hanging out with us, listening. I want to say thank you to you, Dave, for, you know, being my accountability buddy and pushing me. I'm doing better things every week too. And, you know, anything else you want to throw in before we take off?
Well, I'll shoot back a thank you to you, getting, you know, reconnecting with you and doing this podcast. I'm already, it's like every time we talk, I get like three new ideas of things that I know I can do or should be doing better, which is really fun for me. Cause I'm always trying to improve. Right. And yeah, thank you to everybody out there. And I think the message for non-traditional can be summarized with finding balance, whether it's finding balance between social emotional needs and the learning expectations and standards, or finding balance between doing what you've always done and then using the fact that you might be doing something that's non-traditional as an opportunity to try something different, or to acknowledge the fact that it's not the same and to do things a little bit different, right? We got to balance all those things. So,
right. Awesome. Well, everybody have a great week. We love you. We'll see you all back here hopefully next Thursday for another great episode and in ways of connecting with kiddos. So have a great week.
Have a great one. Thanks, guys.